Did you know buying, selling, fixing houses, and investing in real estate is easier than you think? All you need is help from a couple of experts who flipped hundreds of houses, seen most situations, and are here to share their knowledge with you. Welcome to the Real Estate Boys radio show and podcast. Now, Andrew Job and J.R. Reed from PerinaProperties.com.
What's going on, Rounders? Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Boys radio show.
I thought you were going to mess it up for a
second. No, I would never mess it up, man. I've been practicing this. I am one of your hosts, Andrew Job, joined by Mr. J.R. Reed. How you doing, J.R.?
I'm doing great. Is this something you practice in the shower?
Or? You know, I was actually woke up so nervous because I really wanted to impress our guests today, and I was like, I got to get this perfect. And so, yeah, I've been like working on it since I woke up. That's the only thing I've done today.
It's the only thing you've
done. That's
it. Okay, well, you nailed it.
Thank you.
Nailed that thing. Well, yeah, I'm super excited because we've got none other than Alan Quintero and AJ Jimenez from Easy Land as guests today to talk about moving land.
It's all about the land.
Moving the land.
Yeah, we should talk about some land. Let's do it.
We can talk about all kinds of things. So we're going to get these guys' story. They're locals here. I would say probably the local experts I know in Houston when it comes to land. And really, y'all's name just comes to mind every time I think of land.
That's good. That's what we've been hoping for.
Yeah, I'll just make it easy, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the name. It's the name.
So I always start off by asking everybody to just go ahead and give us a quick peek into your life before you got started in real estate.
Peek into my life. So back in 2015, I was working as a contractor for Comcast and thought I was doing pretty well for myself, making about $2,000 every Friday.
Nice.
And I was spending it as fast as I was making it. So
Saturday, it's gone.
Yeah, no, literally. I was going out to eat, you know, Christmas, wilding out. But other than that, I mean, I was like, man, I'm making it. I'm doing pretty good. And then all of a sudden, that type of work just went downhill. And I ran into someone that invited me to say, hey, you want to join a wholesaling company? I had no idea what wholesaling was in real estate. I knew I wanted to do something in real estate, but I didn't know what. So that was the peak of my life where I felt like I was on the clouds, for sure.
The peak of your life?
Yeah.
So it's just been downhill since then?
No. At that time, I felt like I was on the peak of my life.
Okay.
But, you know, of course, now it's changed and much better now.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, you know, as far as me, I'm pretty young, so I got into real estate really young. I started working for Mattress Mack here in Houston, so Gallery Furniture. You know, I did everything from pretty much pick up trash, move furniture.
How old were you when you started working with Mattress Mack?
I was 15 years old, yeah. So,
what did they call you at Gallery Furniture?
Yeah, one time Mack referred me as to his, like, apprentice. I was always with him on, you know, Saturdays, Sundays, all day. Moving furniture, picking up trash, greeting customers, taking them to the sides of the store they needed to be at. And then even working on like the internet department for a little bit, service. I've moved around everywhere. But eventually I ended up in sales where I really kind of fell in love with that aspect of things. And, you know, Mac was always doing like intensive training, sales trainings, talking about marketing. He would bring people in, learning about like active listening and things like that. So self-development, all that stuff I got introduced to at that age by him. And then around 17 years old, I went to a free Grant Cardone event here in Houston near like the NRG Stadium where they like this little hotel. And then from there, I met this man, you know, kind of talked about the basics, showed me what, you know, is out there as far as like investing, single family rentals and flips and wholesaling. And then from there, just kind of started to do like some drive for dollars, send mailers, and then I landed like my first deal like 4 months into doing all that stuff.
So y'all both, your introduction to real estate was wholesaling.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
When did y'all's paths cross? How did you guys get on the same page?
Yeah. That's a funny story.
Yeah,
actually.
That's a good story. I would talk about everything. Yeah. So, you know, we actually met at an event probably 3 months, like a month or two after I got in, started, you know, learning about all this stuff.
Like a real estate meetup networking event?
It was wholesaling.
Yeah, wholesaling live in the Woodlands. That was a great event.
Well, Ricardo's event.
Yeah. Wait, what was it? All the Arizona gurus came to Houston for a weekend,
right.
pretty much.
That's right.
So we met briefly that day just real quick, but like, you know, 5-10 minute conversation. We got real cool. We swapped information. And then whenever I had that first deal, I was just calling people on my phone to see who could help me out, figure this out. So I call him, and then, you know, what happened from there?
So I was working with Jackie Swaggerty. You probably know who she is. Yeah. So at that time, she was like flipping a lot of homes, and she started a wholesaling operation. So I was working with her, and then somehow his deal came to my table, and I was like, oh, wait, I know she buys in this zip code. It was right off of Antoine and 290 area.
Nice.
And so I give her the house, and like minutes later, she's like, where do I send EMD, you know? Let me lock it in. So I called him back. I was like, hey, send us a contract. She wants to buy this house. She's ready to send the EMD. And long story short, we didn't find out till later, but like this dude was literally in high school, in class, closing the deal.
Nice.
You were in high school at
in
the time?
In high school. Yeah. Dude. Yeah. So this was funny about it, you know, and we closed our first deal without even trying, or like it just came back, you know, just the way the universe just brought us back.
So what were you doing for Jackie at that time?
I was doing, at that time, dispositions.
Okay, so you're doing dispo for Jackie.
Yep.
And you're like, hey, I think she'll buy something.
Yep.
So he tells you this, and then what goes through your mind when he tells you, hey, she buys, and she wants to buy this thing and send him EMD, send me the contract?
Man, honestly, I was just kind of like winging it, to be honest with you. You know, I was just like, it's real whenever, you know, I have the check in my hand or in my bank account, right? So I was just like, all right, well, next step, what's next?
That's cool.
And then, yeah, that's kind of how. And then we didn't talk for like a year after that.
Yeah. So that first deal, though, well, how much was that? Did you net on that deal?
It was like a $45,000 deal, and then I made like about 12 or 13,000 bucks.
That's phenomenal, man.
Yeah.
Especially as a guy in high school.
Yeah, I was remember being in class, and like I remember like the title company was calling me. This is funny. This is actually. Really
I'm
funny.
In social studies right now. I need to take a break.
Yeah, the teacher's like. I pick up the phone, and he's like, you're not supposed to be. I'm like, hold on, this is important. And then I'm like talking to the title company, and then I explain what I'm doing, and he's like, wow, okay. I want let me know more about this when you finish.
The teacher?
Yeah, that's so hilarious. That was really funny. But yeah, a couple months like after that, COVID happened, which was like the biggest blessing to me because I wasn't really that good in school, so it saved me. It helped me graduate. And I just
What do you mean it helped you graduate?
Oh, man, I was not going to go through. I had too much to catch up on.
Like failing classes or what?
Man, it's just I was already like introduced to like the entrepreneur world. And
you just
like,
you were just done with schoolwork.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna go much past that, to be honest. So,
so COVID got you a passing grade. They just kind of pushed you along and said, "All right, let's not do this again."
From there, I was just like cold calling every day. So I would work 2 or 3 days with Mattress Mack, you know, in sales, and I would make a living. I actually, you know. Doing pretty well for myself for working 2-3 days a week, and then on the other days I was just, you know, trying to get another deal, you know. That's just pretty much
cracking down on the phones, just getting on the phones, banging it out.
Yeah, I just, you know, was learning a lot about the business at the time, so, you know, didn't have a CRM, you know, just writing leads on a piece of paper, and didn't get that far, but, you know, I learned a lot about it all in that time. It was important.
Cool. So at what point then did you come back together and y'all are like, okay?
I think it was like a year and a half later. We ran into each other again at a Pace Morby event down over there by Richmond area. And we talked again and we're like, dude, we keep running into each other. You know, why don't we do something together, partner up on something? And so we started meeting up the next week after. And then we started talking more about business, more of what we wanted to do and what could we do. And at that time, I was still doing houses. He was still doing houses. And then I had just got a program from Brent Bowers, the Land Shark. And I was like, dude, let's just do this land stuff, you know? So much better than houses. You know, the numbers just make so much sense.
Yeah, like at the time, he showed me the numbers and I had saved like, I don't know, between $5,000 and $10,000. And I was like, all right, I want to spend this in marketing. And then he showed me like the performance on this land campaign. And at the time it was like, $400 per closed deal. And I was like, let's do this. Let's spend the money on that. This is going to go way farther. So that's kind of how, you know, it started just based off of that. But can you talk about like the first deal you did before I kind of came on board? Because like that opened the doors to honestly everything. Because it was like you talked about how easy it was or how much more easy.
Yeah. So, well, the first one, it was a small deal, but it was so fast. It happened so quick that I was like, what the heck? This makes so much sense. You know, there's no emotional attachment behind a house here. It's just a piece of raw land. The buyer, I didn't even have to meet him out there. Like, it was just so good, you know. To me, it was just like, you know, A to Z real quick. And it wasn't like a big fee, but it was maybe like $7,000 or something.
Yeah, I remember being like $8,000.
Yeah, something small. It was in Grimes County, I remember it. And from there on, I was like, man, this just makes so much sense. Let's just do this and, you know, just freaking scale this.
So how many deals had y'all done before y'all started deciding to go and do the land thing? Like single family wholesaling deals?
So on my end, I was just working the dispositions. So I probably wholesaled maybe around like 12 deals or so.
Okay.
Within a time of like maybe 6 months.
Cool.
Because I was kind of a little bit everywhere.
Yeah.
When I was working with Ricardo, I was the TC guy and I was running his meetings for his team. And then I would just handle the files. And then slowly I started graduating into like dispositions.
Cool.
And that's kind of where I started liking it. I was like, man, I got a feel for this. I was going to meetups, meeting buyers all the time, just building my buyer list. And I loved doing it because it was like very interactive, you know, being at the property, walking the property. It was pretty cool to me. But yeah, about 12 or so. And then him, I don't know.
So actually, yeah, this is a good story. So I do that first one. And then, like I say, I'm learning, I'm cold calling, I'm trying to figure out how to text and how to pull lists and all this stuff. Didn't do anything until that.
Like, until then.
But I was trying.
Okay.
And some of it was inconsistency, you know, but I was showing up pretty consistent. Like, but there would be periods where I'm like, all right, well, I need to save some more money so I can go back and try again. So it was probably like a year of me doing that. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to give up. I know it's real. Like, I know I can do it. And, you know, talking to sellers and stuff like that just made it realize, like, all right, well, it's just more people I need to talk to. So I learned a lot about, like, you know, everything needed to be done on the acquisition side, marketing and all that side. And then when we got together, it's like, okay, well, we just switched the product to land. And then it just kind of clicked, to be honest, from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I just was going to say, I think that's so important where it's like you had proof of concept early. And so you knew this worked. Whereas if it had been reversed, where you're like, okay, I'm going to try this out and just grinding it out for a year, there's a lot of people who would just at that point give up. But because you had that early success, you're like, I know this works. I just got to commit to it. Something's not clicking, but eventually you figured it out.
I think what also helped a lot was like just meeting other people that were already doing it that just proved it even more. Like, you know, we're all human. There's not really anything different, much different than anybody, right? So
social proof.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, I started hanging out with him and they were like looking at houses. I'll just go with them and walk. And I was just like, okay, this is doable, you know? So I guess that also helped a lot, too.
I just think back to your first deal that you did while you're still in high school, and I think about that seller that had to meet this high school kid showing up to his house, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to buy your house. And he's like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's just sell it to you.
Man, well, you got to remember, too, like, I've already had, you know, good, at the time, maybe two and a half years of being face-to-face in front of customers.
For sure.
And learning that, like, you know, how to take care of, you know, the customer, so a lot of that helped. When that time I met the seller, I was nervous. I bought a new outfit. I was like, I got to look grown. And it worked. It worked.
I love that. So what'd you wear? Were you wearing like a suit and tie?
A little slacks and a white collar shirt and some little dress shoes.
Nice.
So, I mean, I don't know if she realized how young I was, but yeah, she, you know, it worked out.
He played the part.
Yeah.
You know, I had a internship when I was in high school, and the guy I was working for, I was selling concrete, right? And I always had that imposter complex where it's like, because then I got summer jobs and I was selling repair jobs and that sort of thing, but I always thought no one's gonna buy from me, I'm too young, like they don't take me seriously and that sort of stuff. But he told me, and I've thought this my entire life, he's like, age is just a number. Mm-hmm. You go in there, you're confident, you present yourself well, dress well like you did, you're articulate, and you know the right skill sets. Nobody cares about your age. All they care about is, can you do what you say you're going to do?
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
They don't ask you, hey, are you in high school or not? Like, that's never a question.
No. There's people that are older that don't get it done. So, you know, age is definitely, you know, nothing to consider.
Yeah, 100%. So I love that. So y'all get together, and it wasn't really working until y'all got together is what it sounds like.
Yep.
Was it like a little inconsistent for you, right?
Yeah, definitely inconsistent for sure, especially learning new things, you know, in the market and marketing and all those things.
But like kind of once we clicked, we realized like, all right, well, let's just separate it into departments. So I'll handle marketing and acquisition. You handle dispo and TC. So we ran with it like that for a long time.
Awesome. So you ran with it like that for a hard time, for a long time, and then where did y'all start seeing success? Like, at what point in the business were you like, "Oh wow, I think we're on to something here"?
I'm gonna be honest. I mean, as soon as we switched to land, like we built the pipeline like relatively quick. Like, I mean, we got to like 60 or 80 grand in potential profit. I mean, I want to say maybe like 40 of it was already assigned.
Yeah.
And then we had like a partnership fallout with two other individuals. So we just, all right, let's just pick it up again. Let's do it. And we like, it was probably 3 or 4 months before the end of that year, but we still did like 10 deals together.
Nice.
And then the next year is where like, we had our first full year together. And that was probably like 60 deals or 70 deals we did that year.
Nice.
Just
so,
land.
So the at first, were you all working on it full time, or were you still working as dispo for somebody else? And you were still working for Mac?
So I was actually doing, I was running a GC company.
Okay.
I was doing general contracting and doing flips and stuff for investors. And so I was doing that full time and then doing dispo and TC full time. I still remember this day, like literally tearing up floors and getting a call from like a buyer or something or a title company. And here I am entering the calls and going back on my knees and then another call and just running back and forward doing that, you know? So I did that for probably, I would say we did it for like 6 or 8 months or so.
Yeah.
Consistently. Yeah. So.
That's awesome, man. So you're moonlighting, getting this thing going. And then Alan, you were still working for Mac?
So I was still working like 2-3 days. Sometimes it was like Friday through Sunday. And then if there was a promotion, I'd be there like all, you know, the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
But
BOGO sales.
Yeah, there you go.
President's Day.
No, those Astros promotions where
I forgot. Yeah,
make sure you go to Gallery Furniture, get you a mattress. $6,000 or more Astros when you get it for you. Had to put that there. Still represent. But
he's loyal to this day.
But yeah, you know, 2-3 days at the week, and then the other 4 days I was always just doing this. So it was like no anything else outside of that. Same thing for him, like
that was a Monday through Sunday thing for both of us.
Yeah.
That's great. That's, I mean, I love that at such a young age to be, you know, that driven that you're like, okay, I'm going to work to make enough money, and then the rest of the time I'm going to work to try to build this business. And so what point did you quit your jobs and say, okay, we're going to do this full time?
This is about like 6 or 8 months, I would say.
Yeah, and we could have probably did it earlier, but like, you know, I was still making pretty decent money working 2-3 days on the weekend, and I was just like, it was just the point where I realized like, okay, well, it just doesn't, it's just outweighing it now, so... Once we kind of felt that, it was probably like, 6 months for me too, 6 or 8 months.
What year was that where y'all went full-time and on the business?
2000.
It was 22. Yeah, early 22. I think I quit in like either March or April. Yeah. And then, you know, we got together, like just me and him, whenever we just kind of split from that partnership, it was probably like sometime in September, October or something that we, and then we just ran from there. So like I said, couple months at the end of that year of 21, we did about 10, 12 deals just to land. And then 22 is whenever we like pretty much had a chance to go full time.
What was it like for both of you guys during that process of like making the decision? Like, how did you get to the thought process of, okay, I'm actually losing money by not working full time on my business, but then also overcoming the anxiety of giving up that steady job that you knew you could make money from?
Man, I think it was more of like just the concept of proof. Like we were like, we already made money, you know, so we might as well just go full time. And we both agreed like, so let's just go all the way in, you know, and just run with it. But the transition of that was a little tough for me because I was like trying to build a construction business, which I've already done with my dad for like 5 years or so. So I was getting the hang of it, you know, and, you know, building out systems and hiring people and stuff like that. So I had to tell my dad, I was like, hey, I'm going to have to just quit this and just full-time this. And he was okay with it, you know? He wasn't opposed to it, or he wasn't saying like, oh, well, no, I need you to run my business, you know? He was completely fine. So it was a little tough pill to swallow, but I knew ultimately by doing so, it was going to be so much better on the long term.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, for me, it was a little difficult, like in a sense of like, I really did love working there. Especially because like it was like a self-development boot camp, you know, like sales trainings all day. He's Max talking about like stories and talking about all this positive stuff in our heads all day. So it was like I loved being there. It was literally like a boot camp for me, like, you know, to develop. And then I think once it got to that point, it was like yeah, it was kind of like nerve-wracking to think about, like, dang, you know, what do, we got to figure it out now every month. But one big thing that also I feel like helped was we just saved all that money we made, you know, during the months we were working and doing that. So, like, if you're working a job and you're doing real estate, like, save the real estate money and just live off the other job. And then, you know, you have a nice bankroll to feel comfortable with leaving.
That takes a lot of discipline, a lot of maturity to not just say, cool, man, I made some money. Like, time to go buy a watch, time to get some shoes, time to go to the club with my boys.
No, I think one thing, like, for both of us, like, you know, we didn't really realize it in the beginning, but we really did have, like, very aligned morals or, like, this, you know, values. It's like, you know, we're here to help out our family. You know, it's not for us to go do all that stuff. So, you know, we were just, like, you know, just storing this money so we could, you know, help people out and our families, you know, both of us.
And it's funny because it's like we set all the ground rules. You know how you get into a relationship with, you know, women and stuff too. It's like the same thing, but it's like obviously very important in a partnership too. You know, set ground rules and, you know, things you should and shouldn't do. So we both aligned very well. So that helped us a lot too, stay disciplined. And he was always like, bro, just stack your money, man. Don't touch it and just keep going, you know, don't look at it. And he put that in my head from the beginning, and from there it's like, dang, I got disciplined even more, you know. Because like I was saying earlier, that job that I was getting so much money, I was like, I wasn't as disciplined as I am now, you know. I was getting it and just spending it. As soon as I was getting it, it was already gone.
So you had that experience early where you're like, okay, this is what it looks like, and if things go bad, what am I left with?
Exactly. So that helped me too a lot. Definitely did.
That's awesome. So y'all come together and you do this business together and you start having success, and then you go and you start having full time or doing it full time. At what point were you like, okay, we need to hire more people so we can do more stuff?
We always kind of like from the beginning, we felt like, you know, I know some people kind of struggle with like feeling like they don't know if they can bring somebody on yet. But I think our proof of concept early was like, okay, this works. We know there's opportunity for somebody to come in here and make some money as well. So we've always kind of came up with creative ways to bring people in, either whether it be like commission only, get paid on the deals that you touch. So yeah, like from the beginning, I mean, we brought kind of like an equity partner on to handle marketing. So he just always makes sure there's leads touching our system, which was big because I realized most people's bottlenecks was they just always had struggles with, you know, the leads, right? Like they could close all day, but you know, they just didn't never had consistent flow all day in and out leads coming through. So, you know, Francisco, he came in with us early, and it's just kind of been us three. And we've always kind of would have an acquisition agent just to handle the leads. I would be helping him, you know, the acquisitions or, you know, just kind of like, I guess my role was more of like put the systems, the process and kind of get the game to go. And then, you know, we just all played it together pretty much.
Nice. So what does your team look like today?
Today, what do we have? Five of us in office, right? So we have, it's me, you got AJ, we have Francisco, we have an acquisition, Christian, and then an admin in office, Corey. And yeah, you know, like that's just in office. And what we've been able to do with, like, the social media, talking about land, we've made this Discord, and we've got, you know, about 300, 350 people in there. And then we realized, you know, we're just talking about land, all things land investing. And we started to get, like, a group of people who wanted to do this but necessarily didn't want to do acquisitions. So we just had them help us sell our properties.
Really?
Like, you know, commission only, sales people, sales reps, and he's kind of over them, so... That's kind of like external. That's the way we look at it. But internally, we have, you know, the five in office, virtual sales rep that we just recently hired in California, and then two virtual assistants, remote workers that work with us in Mexico that are internal.
Nice. And so what are y'all's responsibilities now that y'all have built the business to where it's at?
Things have kind of been changing a little bit recently. You know, kind of now that everything is built out and there's like a good game going on. I like to think of it like a game, right? So everybody can come and play.
For sure.
And now it's kind of more where, you know, AJ is over all the dispo people and he's over the acquisitions now and he's kind of like playing that coach role, you know, doing that type of thing. And I've kind of been working more on the distressed real estate side, trying to, you know, pick up that business line.
Cool. So going back into more houses.
Yeah, we don't care what it is.
Okay.
As long
just
as we
everything.
Buy it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So expanding your lead base a little bit. You're focused on land and then said let's bring in more types of leads.
Yeah. We did a couple crazy transactions where we're like, okay, maybe we, kind of focus on some of this stuff a little bit more and really try to get something cranking because we see it pays well. So, but the land's, kind of been our main focus for the past years, and this is just kind of something we realized recently.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the, excuse me, we're all coughing today.
It's that pollen.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's pollen here in Houston. So let's talk about those transactions that y'all did, because those are pretty wild stories. And let's talk about what the distressed property acquisition is.
Yeah. So, I mean, just one of them, this is just one of the we picked about five different pieces of inventory last year from one seller. And that seller, just couldn't sell it. He tried to hire agents. He tried to sell through, I'm guessing, some wholesalers that got in contact with him. But he just couldn't get it to clear through title for whatever reason. It was like really messy area with all these problems from like 1915. So kind of worked through a lot of the small stuff, legal description issues, pipeline that was dead from BP pipelines from 2008 that did that oil spill. They got absorbed by two or three different companies. It's just a whole bunch of like mess in the area. So, yeah, we purchased them like significantly cheap, and we're able to make, I don't know, like
hold on to how much you make, and we want to get deeper into it. We're going to take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsor, and we want to hear more details of like what it actually looked like.
Yeah. Okay.
Welcome back, Rounders. We are still sitting here talking about everything land and the amazing story of these gentlemen getting started from high school into real estate, straight from high school, right into real estate. What an amazing story.
I mean, you built it up. It was awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great build up. All right. So we were talking about a special deal that got you all to take on another line of business, which is the distressed property acquisition business. Or at least start messing around with it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you came across this property that it sounds like had a ton of issues, and it sounds like it had title issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then you convinced this guy, like, how did that unfold that you bought it? Because it sounds like you bought it without title insurance.
No, we actually ended up going through the title because I was just like, I wasn't that comfortable with it at the time. We've dealt with a bunch of stuff, just flipping land, running into crazy situations with, sellers or whatever. But, in this case, he just didn't know much about the situation. So it was kind of more of like leaning on us to help him figure it out. And it was just a ton of research.
Like, what was it? He inherited the property or?
It was his, a mother had dementia. He was power of attorney, and he was just helping taking care of their affairs. So it wasn't like it was behind on taxes. They're really good keeping, all their debts up to date. It's just a lot of issues, right? Like, they just couldn't figure it out. So, I did like a whole bunch of research, and then we talked to a title company, and they're like, oh, it's not that bad, So, they kind of helped us, assisted us a bunch with getting it all cleaned up, and then, it went pretty smooth, We've done other transactions that had a lot more stress on our shoulders. And yeah, we did make some money, but it was just like, oh, okay, this was a lot less, stress, and we still made a good amount of money.
Yeah.
So like, let's look into something, more like this.
And a good amount of money being six figures?
In the range, it was a good, good payday for everybody.
Another proof of concept of, all right, we can make pops like this, then exactly. It's worth sticking around.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And we're been blessed that every year, God gives us some great opportunities on a yearly basis where we are able to hit some multiple six-figure, land deals. So that's kind of what we always kind of stuck into this thing. We never really needed to, mess with houses or anything different, multifamily. We've always just kind of, let's focus on this. We know it's here. We just got to figure out how to hit a couple more of these.
So as a listener, and me being someone that doesn't know anything about real estate investing, I would assume that houses are easier than land because it's a house, it's been built, it should be an easy transaction. Whereas my novice brain would think that there'd be a lot of issues with land, divided interests. Is that not the case, or what? What it's kind of the,
yeah, I would say definitely not the case. I think a lot of people just have the concept of, you know, just seeing more of people doing wholesaling houses than land. And I think a lot of people sleep on land. You know, we drive by it every single day, and a lot of people ignore it as opposed to, you know, houses, of course. But I definitely would say it's a lot easier in a concept of, you know, the sense of the attachment, like I was saying earlier. There's no emotional attachments to the land whatsoever. A lot of people that are even owning some land nowadays are out of the state, out of the country, so they don't even know anything about the land. They don't even care about it. Honestly, they just want to let it go for, you know, whatever they can get. Obviously, we're very reasonable and with whatever we give them, but I definitely would disagree with that.
I think, like, one thing with land, right, where people kind of misinterpret the value of it, because, like, it kind of goes to the story where, let's say, you ever heard, you know, the farmer has 100 acres, right, and he's getting ready to sell this land. So, you know, he has one potential customer or one potential buyer that's another farmer, and he gives him an offer of, you say, $500,000 on his 100 acres, right? Well, with that farmer's business model, you know, that's just what he can pay. That's what makes sense for him. But let's say you had a developer come in and, you know, they're going to put 300 townhomes on it. They're going to pay a different price because they have a different type of, you know, business model. So with us, like in the beginning, what we realized was so simple was like the price points we were dealing in when we got started was like probably between $10,000 and $100,000. You know, that's just the type of land we were dealing with. And there's a lot of land like that outside of almost every major city, right? So we would focus on stuff, you know, that we felt we could afford to buy at the time, because we would also not just wholesale everything. We would buy some of these deals and just flip them. And I think something important with that is, like, we realized it's kind of like buying and selling cars. You know, like somebody flip a car from Facebook or whatever. Like, you know, it was kind of like really easy to, well, I wouldn't say easy. It was simple, you know. It was very simple, straightforward. You know, there was not construction involved, tenants involved, you know, any of that extra variables. You know, it's just, is the land usable? What is it worth? What is somebody willing to pay for it? And what can we buy it for?
Yeah, it's very simple. Okay, so when I hear land, and I'm a listener to this, I'm thinking y'all are buying hundreds of acres and splitting it up and selling it to developers and, you know, all kinds of things like that. Can you walk me through what is one of your run-of-the-mill transactions? What does it look like? How big is the land? How many people are you buying it from? What price point? You mentioned like $10,000 to $100,000. What does your normal everyday transaction look like?
I would say in the range of closer to 80 to 200 or so. It's like usually the sale price. And what was the other question? I'm sorry.
How big is the land?
Oh, how big is the land?
Man, you know, it's kind of changed, right? So we necessarily, like nowadays, we're not too focused on, like, you know, the size of the land. You know, obviously it's more about margin for us now. So, you know, it could be 0.10, it could be 100 acres, it could be 150 acres, it could be 10 acres, 20 acres. Anything between, you know, literally 0.10 and, you know, 200 acres, we'll take a look at it. Now, it just kind of depends on the strategy, right? So something that's a lot more bigger, you know, typically we're not just going to be able to buy it for a substantial discount for us to make sense to do it. You know, so something like that, we might, you know, chop it up into 10, 20 acre tracts and, you know, do some value add there and, you know, make a good return. Now, when it comes to like the normal stuff, what we started out with was just simply buying and reselling. A lot of that stuff looks like, you know, a quarter acre, half an acre, 3 acres, 5 acres, or 10. And they're just on the outskirts of the major cities. So, you know, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio. Prices obviously have changed these last couple of years with all the, you know, how the market's been. But for the most part, we're selling stuff that people can throw a mobile home on, build their dream home on. Some of it's in HOA neighborhoods. Some of it's not restricted, so they could put a shop and build their home and have cattle. They can, you know, it's kind of like more of what we're looking to do. So we're selling to end users, not too much investors. We're still giving people a good deal, and we're making it easy for them to, you know, buy some land pretty much.
You're providing that American dream. I mean, land ownership is that's the first step, and they got a slice of their own, and they can do whatever they want with it. You're not even selling land. You're selling the dream of owning land.
And we're doing it very easy.
So, talk about that actually a little bit, where, like, I mean, he's talking about how, you know, we're selling them the dream. Like, I mean, how do people buy into that when they're coming to you to buy the land? Like, what is that?
So I think,
how does it make people feel?
So my main concept when, you know, I'm selling land to these end users, I usually, you know, I'll go based off basically that book of How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I always try to gain, you know, more of that friendship relationship to them, especially because a lot of my avatars are Hispanic people, so I can relate and connect with them much quicker than somebody else will, you know. So gaining that friendship initiates something much quicker in the sale, and they separate the sale from negotiating more than a friendship, you know. So it makes it a lot easier for me and them. But I think how that works is, like, you know, I just qualify them very well, ask them the questions we got to ask them, what they're trying to do, when they're trying to do it, and how they're going to do it. And so just by asking those basic questions, I think, and the way I ask it too is so simple, you know, so easy, because it's like, if I can talk to them in Spanish, it's even better for me and for them. It's kind of like, damn, you're like a friend to me now.
Yeah, they look at him like a nephew when it's done.
Yeah. They get all friendly.
He's selling us our dream home location. Dude, I'm going to put my pond over here, my house over here, the goats back here.
Exactly.
Yeah, the goats.
And I'm like, oh, man, yeah, that's a great idea. You know? I'm not going to sit there and tell them, oh, you can't do that, or no, don't do that. Do this instead, you know?
Yeah.
But I think behind all that, it definitely has helped me, you know, close a lot of these deals where I don't have to be so pushy, you know, and kind of negotiate that hard negotiations.
For sure.
And so I think that's helped me a lot, definitely a lot.
That's awesome. What kind of marketing channels are you guys running to find these kinds, and how are y'all targeting these outskirt properties?
For the sellers or the buyers?
For the sellers.
Sellers, okay.
So for sellers, main thing we've, like, you know, the one thing that's always been, you know, year by year, the best return has been direct mail. You know, in the beginning, it was a little expensive because we had tighter budgets, but now we just, you know, send it every month, whatever we need to send, because we know it works. And then for the past maybe year and a half, or close to a year and a half, we've been doing ringless voicemails again. So that's been working really well. You know, we kind of know our demographic, you know. We looked at all of our deals. We understand, you know, the age of, you know, who we were dealing with. A lot of them are over, you know, 60 years old, and a lot of that demographic likes to do business still through the mail. So I feel like that's something that kind of helps.
Yeah. Ringless voicemails and direct mail.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then you've got to market the properties when you buy them. So how are you going about finding all these people who want to buy this kind of property?
So we have a 9-step process in the dispo. So
9 steps. Let's hear it.
And a lot of it I actually learned from, you know, when I first started, you know, wholesaling houses. Being very aggressive in that kind of sense. But what we do is we have somebody prep, you know, our flyers, and we send it through our email campaigns. There's about 15,000 people on there that see our properties immediately. And then from there on, we start posting it on our Facebook, our Instagram, our website. And then we send it to our group that he mentioned earlier in our Discord, who I manage, and I have like Zoom calls with them, like a support call every single week on Wednesdays from 6 to 7. And tell them immediately, hey, this property is ready to go. Put it on y'all's Facebook. Call your buyers that you have, whatever the case is. So then they start working that. And then on my end, I go back. I go to my CRM. I start checking due to our filters that we have set up. And if that buyer is in that zip code or that area, county, or whatever it is, I immediately get on the phones. And then we have another process where we have our VA in Mexico. He goes, and we call it a single skip. I know a lot of people don't do it, but it's a little tedious, takes some time, but what happens is a lot of the times whenever these deals that go sold under the radar, mm-hmm. like they're not, you know, documented through like an agent or they're off market, we have on our MLS, we'll click around on the properties that are in the area and you're able to see like recent close dates. And so we just have them pull that type of people. Sometimes it doesn't pull up.
The people like, who have sold recently?
Yeah.
Or bought,
because sometimes it doesn't pull up when you do like a massive, you know, buyer list and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a little tedious, but it works really well. And then we pull buyer lists. We send an SMS campaign. We put bandit signs. And
everything.
Everything you can think of, we're doing. And lastly, we call agents, brokers in the area, if we can't move the deal. Because if we can't move it, then they might have a shot at it, you know, because they know they're a little better too, and maybe buyers they have in their back pocket. But yeah, most of the times it's literally what we're doing, hitting every single marketing strategy. And
I think like one thing that it's kind of proven to us too is like, you know, when we started, the whole reason this kind of like came about where, you know, we had this neighborhood where we would just always pick deals up in. We probably did about 30 plus 35 in them or so. And only one person is able to buy that piece of land, right? So by us, like, you know, being religious about going through these marketing processes anyways, we start to, like, nurture and farm and fill out the CRM of what they're looking for, how they want to pay for it, when they want to buy it, and what they're trying to do with it. And then the next time we get a deal in that area, like, you know, we might have got so many other leads that were actually interested in buying it. Only one got to get it. Everybody else is in line. And he's able to build, like, this huge sense of urgency whenever he calls them back and tell them, oh, that one sold. I got something else coming soon, though, so I'll keep in touch with you.
That's awesome.
So it's like, you know, actually being religious to, like, building a funnel of, you know, relationships, these buyers, and, you know, he's not just talking, like, he's not really talking to investors or not all the time. He's not talking to developers. He does, but a lot of it is, like, you know, he talks about who to talk, well, who to give trades, right? It's contractors. It's people who've just bought in the area recently. It's business owners, small business owners in that area. That's, like, more than half of our clientele that we end up selling to.
Really? Man, that's awesome. So it sounds like you work just as hard, if not harder, to sell the properties than you do to buy the properties.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, definitely.
So I think what a lot of people thought, and they have a misconception about land, is it takes a long time to sell. The only reason it takes a long time to sell for most people is because they mismarket it. They just throw it in the MLS and just hope for someone to call them and do it. So, you know, bandit signs, he always, you know, sometimes just a business owner driving by on the way home, he'll call them and he'll have them walk their property the same day.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to market it better.
Yeah, that's all it takes.
So when you're selling to these buyers, are they just paying cash? Are they going to go get a loan? Are you guys creating notes? What does that look like for y'all's business in terms of how you're selling the properties?
Most of the times, they're buying them cash.
Yeah, a lot of the times they are able to buy them cash. There's some cases where he'll have somebody that wants to use a small bank. That's one of the really broken parts in land, right, where it's not really that financeable. A lot of the banks turn their head away from it. They look at it like a secondary asset, kind of like somebody going to buy a boat, right, after they have a couple cars. So, you know, by being able to offer owner finance, you know, we learn early, like, that opens up your buyer pool, right? Not everybody might not have, you know, $50,000 to pay cash for this piece of land, but they do have 10, right? And they can pay $800 or $1,000 or $500 a month. So, you know, in the beginning, you know, we did owner finance a couple properties, and, you know, we would pretty much cover our entry of the deal with the down payment. We'd get that back and we just hold the note, right? But we realized, like, you know, notes are cool, but we can't, like, you know, keep up with this and just have money tied into these deals, because some of them not always like that. So, you know, what we started to do was, on the deals that we get for, you know, a good price, we'll offer it for owner finance. We'll offer, you know, 15, 20, 25% down. We'll structure a note, and then at the closing table, we'll sell that note and we'll walk away with, you know, upfront profit, you know.
Nice. So you are selling that note to a note buyer at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's great. You're still providing a solution of owner financing, but you guys just aren't having the headache of having to source the note or collect payments and do all that.
And we just walk away with, like, a big chunk of profit, like a flip upfront, like, you know, cash. Same thing. Exactly.
And it's funny, but we've seen on some of the deals we've done in the past, we've actually made more money by creating a note and selling it at the closing than we would have wholesaling it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So,
because you're selling to an end buyer for a higher price, and then you probably go sell the note, if I had to guess. Actually, let's do this. Why don't you all explain real quick, what is creating a note and selling a note?
Got it. So, like, pretty much mortgages are like almost like another word for a promissory note, right? So anybody out there, you know, promissory note is pretty much backed by the real estate. So if somebody wanted to owner finance a property, they're going to have this piece of paper. Some people do deed of trust. Some people do contract for deed. We create promissory notes. So, you know, it's pretty much secured by the property. It gets transferred in their name. And then if they, for whatever reason, maybe if they don't pay, you know, we could just take the property back over, right? But yeah, a note is pretty much like an instrument. It's like a mortgage. It's like,
it's a promise that I'm going to pay you until this thing's paid off.
Exactly. And usually what that consists of is a principal amount, an interest amount, and a term of how long, you know, the payments are going to ride out for. And like you said, it's an instrument. So somebody be willing to buy that note, they'd be looking to get a discount on it because they want to make a better return than that just simple interest rate. But it also provides them security and they get a pretty good return.
And cash flow in the future.
Yeah. They don't have to do anything. They just collect payments, literally.
And so that's, I mean, there's a lot of investors out there that, like, you guys are selling these to, but that's what they want to do. They don't want to go get all the land and do all the work that you're doing. They just want to have the note that they can buy in cash flow.
Exactly.
What does that look like for them? What kind of interest rates are you doing on these? And then kind of what discount are you selling these notes to the investors?
I'm going to talk a little bit about, like, the interest rate differences.
Yeah, so what we like to do is, like, cater to them and, like, pretty much come to them, like, with a box, like a wrap bow box, you know. And there's various things that we do. So we do charge anywhere from 10% interest rates. We try to do sometimes if we can get away with it, like a five-year balloon. We've happened to see they pay a little bit more that way. And then we put a package together. We do an RMLO. You know, we get, you know, a whole package ready for them that, you know, this client's able, willing and able to pay for this, you know, long-term, you know, the note that they're going to be paying on. And so that helps a lot also. And they pay a little bit more that way. And so, yeah, no, it definitely helps with all those things to put it as a whole one piece, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, like, you know, when it comes to the buyer that's stepping in and they're trying to owner finance the property from us, like, we come in very open-minded with them, right? Like, you know, we try to figure out what can you afford, what's, you know, what you can comfortably put down. You know, could you put a little more down than that? You know, what could you pay a month? Can you pay a little more than that? You know? And then, you know, once we kind of can set on something, you know, he mentioned the five-year balloon. Some people, especially owner finance folks, they always say, oh, don't worry, I'm going to pay it off early anyways.
Always.
So what we say is like, okay, well, you know, if you're comfortable, if we can, you know, put this balloon in there, you know, if you want to pay it off early, you know, whatever.
Just to encourage them a little bit more to pay
off. Yeah, so it's not like we're trying to force somebody into like a really strict deal. You know, we try to want to make it comfortable for both ends because the no buyer as well, they're not trying to go into anything too risky, right?
Of course not.
They want to go in. They just want to collect their return. They don't want to have to go foreclose. That's what some people have this misconception of like, oh, it's better if they don't pay. I'm like, man, you know.
They don't want to.
They don't want to deal with that.
Your no buyer doesn't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Just like banks, right? I mean, private investors, a bank doesn't want to own a house. Mm-hmm. They want to make a loan on the house and they want to collect payments.
Exactly.
They foreclose because they have to, not because they ever want to own the house.
Yep. And like, you know, when it comes to land and owner finance, you know, number one, land, a lot of banks don't participate in it. So it just creates like this secondary market that's huge of note buyers that want to invest in land. And yes, they can go do it in houses as well, but they're going to get a way better yield in land because some people view it as more risk, right?
For
but
sure.
If someone forecloses and they miss those payments, a lot of times they make improvements. They put a septic. Clear it up. They have utilities now. So when they go around and turn and sell it again, they're going to sell for a higher price. For sure. So
that makes a lot of sense. Well, guys, we're coming down to the end of our show. We got a few minutes left. I always ask people when they come on the show, what's something that they would want to leave with the listeners, whether they're brand new people to real estate investing and they just are trying to get started in real estate investing, or it's the seasoned professionals. So I want to give you both an opportunity to be able to go and say something.
Go first? Okay. So I would definitely advise to focus on one side of the business, because a lot of people think, oh, I can do houses, I can do land, I can do apartments, I can wholesale this, all that, which you probably can, but you need a team, right? But if you're a startup, just focus on one thing. And then one thing I definitely would say is just be very consistent in marketing. I think marketing is the number one key here to keep you growing, and you just never know what's going to come through that door.
Yep, absolutely.
One thing I would leave with people, I would say probably just continue to learn, right, throughout your journey, right? So, I mean, something that even Mac would always talk about is like continuing to learn. He's 70 years old, 72 years old, and he's literally still reading books to this day. And like another mentor that I had, you know, pretty much told me one time, like, you want to learn something new every day. One thing, just have that on the go. And, you know, you look down, you go down this road and you look back and you're like, wow, you know, I'm kind of an expert in what I know now, right? But, you know, it's because you had to put in the, you know, the energy to actually do that. So just keep learning. And I think that, you know, take you a long way.
Awesome. What's a good way for people to get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you or learn about Easy Land or get on your Discord?
For Discord, you can shoot me a text. Can I get my number here?
Yeah.
Okay. It's 346-235-6767, AJ Jimenez. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, it's Abimael. My first name is A-B-I-M-A-E-L, and then last name is Pinon. It's on there, P-I-N-O-N.
Yeah, so I'm not giving my number out, but no, I'm kidding. Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, Alan, A-L-A-N-H Quintero. Same thing on Facebook. Shoot me a message, connect me on there, and yeah, we'd be glad to bring you into the Discord.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. We greatly appreciate you guys being willing to come share your insights of what you're doing in your business and spend an afternoon with us.
Thank you guys for having us. We appreciate it.